Well, you'll be here at the Waldo Theater in Maine back again June 20th and 21st for The Naked Truth. Where will you take us on our journey?
Well, it's a completely different show than I did last time. Every year I completely rewrite it and everything. And I'm talking about everything, my career, fashion, politics, sex, everything. But a whole new look on it because we're living in such a different time, different politics, different sexual modes, different how young people see everything. So I think it's a show that will make you laugh. That's the main point. Not many directors have a stand-up act about the movie business, but I do. I think Kevin Smith does. We both do.
Well, I love your explanation of your youth growing up, I think, as you put it, in the tyranny of bad taste in Baltimore.
No, I grew up in the tyranny of good taste.
A good taste. I'm sorry. Yes.
And,
yes.
And that is why you have to learn the rules of good taste to parody bad taste and embrace it. If you don't know the rules, you don't get it. And I think, yes, I thank my parents for being so drilled in me good taste, right? And so that's why I could rebel in a good way and be happy about it.
And am I right that it was your grandmother who gave you a movie camera?
She did. It was a little Brownie movie camera, but I already had a puppet show career. I had been a puppeteer at children's birthday parties from when I was 12 on, and I did quite well with that. And then the puppet show started getting too weird and the parents stopped hiring me, and then I made movies.
And because you didn't know how to edit, you shot everything in sequence?
Yeah, I said, you know, I won the editing award. This is the Lifetime Achievement Award from the ACE Editing Foundation. And I thought, well, I didn't even know what editing was when I made my first movie, Hag in a Black Leather Jacket. I just shot every shot in order, and that was the movie. So in a way, that was very experimental. That was like later something called Dogma 95 that came out that was all these rules. I was Lars von Queer.
Myself and some high school friends must have taken inspiration from you because back in the early mid-70s, a similar thing. We had a movie camera, a Super 8. Nobody knew how to do any editing. Everything shot in sequence. And we won a Maine Amateur Filmmakers Festival with our take, and I think you'd appreciate this, on The Godfather that we called The Godfarter.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. I made a movie once in prison where we did the same thing. I taught filmmaking, and we just waited for a song to come on the radio and did the scene so you'd have a soundtrack behind when we were doing the scene. And we shot it in order, too, because there was no way you could edit a movie in prison. And today, kids, they just use their cell phone. They don't have to have all this expensive equipment and everything. The only problem is cell phones make everything look good. Diane Arbus couldn't have had a career. You can't take an ugly picture on your cell phone. It corrects it.
And your muse, Divine, lived near your parents. Is that right?
Yeah. He lived right up the street. And he was a he. Divine would have approved of the trans movement, but he was not trans one bit. He was a proud drag queen. He was never dressed as a woman unless somebody paid him.
And made a magnificent Jackie Kennedy. Who knew?
He did. And with my parents, we shot that on my parents' suburban street. And, you know, talk about being supportive. My parents were very, very straight. They kind of looked like George and Barbara Bush. And yet we filmed the entire Kennedy assassination 2 years after it happened. People, the neighbors really didn't think it was funny.
We're talking with John Waters. Well, Pink Flamingos, Female Trouble certainly established you as a maker of cult classics. But was it Hairspray that really took things to a whole new level?
Oh, completely. Well, first Polyester did, because that was shot in 35mm. It was an R rating. It opened in regular movie theaters all across the country. And we had the Odorama gimmick with it. So it was a hit. So, but yes, Hairspray accidentally became my first big commercial movie. But yeah, we had a big budget. It was a musical. It was filmed like a Hollywood movie. Yes.
And that was based on an actual show, the Buddy Dean Show in Baltimore.
Yeah, that came on. We never had American Bandstand. We were the only city that didn't. We had Buddy Dean, and it came on every day, well, 6 days a week. And at the height of its career, of its run, was on for 4 hours a day. Can you imagine those local kids? They were bigger than the Mouseketeers here.
And hairdos were really a political statement.
Well, the weird thing is it depends what neighborhood you're in. It was a class issue. In my neighborhood, parents hated it if the girls had teased hair. in the blue collar neighborhoods, the mother daughters had the same beehives. They went and got their hair together, done together. So we, our neighborhood called them a hair don't. But at the time, it's still the hairdo capital of the world. The African Americans now are the ones that have the most elaborate hairdos. So there's always elaborate hairdos in Baltimore. It just switches races and ethnic and different classes.
And speaking of class, that was really the basis of Crybaby, very much about class struggle.
Yeah, definitely. Yes, and all rich girls like a bad boy, or they like a powerful older man, and that gets you in worse trouble.
But you were really working, I don't want to say against type, but in some ways poking fun at what Johnny Depp had become in this idea of a teen idol.
Oh, yeah, he hated being a teen idol. I said, you know, stick with us, we'll kill that. But everybody changed their image in it. Tracy Lords had escaped that whole nightmare, and she made fun of it by playing a bad girl. Patricia Hearst was a kidnap victim. Who wants to be a famous kidnap victim? So she made a movie, so when people asked her for an autograph, she had a reason to sign it.
You worked with so many people that one would not expect to be on a movie set together, and I think of, yes, certainly Tracy Lords. David Nelson, that had to be a bit surreal.
David Nelson was the most shocking to Pat Moran and I, the casting director. To see David Nelson, who we grew up with on Ozzy and Harriet, in our movie with Patricia Hearst as his wife and Tracy Lords as his daughter. That, to this day, surprises me.
We talked with Kathleen Turner on our show a while back, and she raved about her experience, said making Serial Mom was one of her absolute favorite filmmaking experiences.
Well, it's the best movie I made. And a lot of that has to do with Kathleen, her incredible professionalism, but also she joined in. She, you know, people said, she's going to be so difficult. You're going to have so much trouble. I didn't have a bit of trouble with her. I got along with her great, and I'm still friendly with her. I took her to the premiere of Scorsese's new movie.
Does it shock you a little bit now to see that films like Serial Mom, Hairspray, and others are not just considered classics, but family favorites today?
Well, I'm so respectable I could puke, and those early movies are even worse than they were with political correctness. But at the same time, it was named by the National Registry as one of the great American movies. And, you know, it's just amazing to me. People in my day, if their parents saw the movie, they called the police. Nowadays, people say, my parents gave me that movie. Or nowadays, my grandparents gave me the movie. And I think, well, they should have been arrested.
Is the key to that, John, that people are laughing, and that in the laughter, sometimes they forget there are things in there that maybe personally they don't agree with?
Yes, because how you change people's opinions, first of all, they're not mean-spirited. I make fun of things I like. I make fun of myself in the very beginning before we start by calling them trash epics and stuff. So I am making fun of the rules of people who think they are outlaws, not the rules of our parents that we escaped, the hippie rules or the politically correct rules, whatever you want to call it, no matter what decade it is. I make fun of mostly left-wing rules.
And now honored by, among others, the Academy of Motion Pictures with a wonderful display there. The Hollywood Walk of Fame. My gosh, you're treading right down Mid-America's Main Street now.
I know. And the Academy Awards Museum was definitely the highlight of my life. What's going to be better than that, really? I mean, to go through 12 rooms at the Academy Awards Museum and see all the little notebooks and everything I had from all those movies. And they did an actually absolutely amazing job of curating that. And it was up for a whole year and a lot of people came.
Well, and I looked at some of the pictures, the incredible amount of artifacts, and yeah, a lot of them yours, but some even from people who were on the sets, who were part of the cast, and everybody contributing to this wonderful exhibit.
And I'm lucky. I have all my stuff at Wesleyan Film Archive, and I'm in good company. They have Clint Eastwood, Ingrid Bergman. All my stuff has been collected there since the mid-80s, so I've had a place to put everything. Like, they had Debbie Harry's giant wig from Hairspray. I didn't even remember they had that. But it's really great that it's all cataloged and everything. So when I die, there's going to be too much information about me.
And you've done so many other things. You've written a book. Will there be another?
I've written six books.
Right. Will there be another Christmas album at some point?
There was a Christmas song this year on Sub Pop Records. I recorded the barking dogs singing Jingle Bells.
Yes.
And I have another Christmas record coming out this year that I can't tell you what it is yet. So, yes, I've always got, and I do a Christmas, the John Waters Christmas tour, 20 cities this year. So, yes, Christmas is when I'm working. I'm like Santa Claus on a bummer.
Well, and you gave some great advice. I work with high school actors, and I use this advice all the time when you're playing comedy, and that's don't wink at the audience.
No, say every word as if you believe it to be true. And then it's much funnier. If you're trying to tell the audience it's funny, you don't believe it is, or you're afraid they won't get it.
Was it William Burroughs who gave you the name, the Pope of Trash?
Yes, and that's like Jesus himself ordaining me.
Could you have imagined any of this, or did you imagine it pretty much like this as a young man in Baltimore?
Well, I didn't imagine it couldn't happen. I got Variety when I was 14. I wasn't naive, but certainly I'm amazed today. I'll be 80 next year. And I look back and think, God, I'm so lucky to be alive to see all this happen. So I don't know. I was always kind of driven. Yeah. So that, and my parents taught me that anything is possible you want to do, even though they wished certainly that I did something else.
I love it. John, thank you so much. What a treat to talk with you. Looking forward to the shows at Waldo Theater. Thank you so much for making time.
I'm coming
time.
Back. Waldo is actually my nickname because I have this jacket that some other dog handler had that name on it. So my oldest friends secretly call me Waldo. So they laugh when I say I'm playing at the Waldo Theater.
Perfect symmetry right there. Thank you, Waldo.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.